search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Broken by Concept, episode 192. Today we are diving into two topics. They're kind of joined together, GeoIQ being one of them, and communication. Communication is all
the key. You'll sort of bounce off the GeoIQ topic, yeah.
That's right. And I want to kick it off more so with the GeoIQ, then we'll ease into the communication aspect, all right? GeoIQ, a very controversial topic. You know, if you're a long-term BBC listener, you probably already have a rough idea on our stance. But I think it's such an important topic, I think. We get this question a lot. I think it warrants an episode within itself. I want to start by setting the scene here, Nathan, using an analogy.
To really get, love analogies here.
Set the scene. Where are we at? What the hell is GeoIQ? Okay. Actually, before we even dive into this analogy, the way me and you, when we hear GeoIQ, right, it goes through our ears and we process this little statement, this little sentence. GeoIQ, what is this? We don't think of it in terms of, all right, go into a game and win a game. Like, we don't even think about it in terms of going into the game and playing with someone else. I think what our mind jumps to immediately is, you are now, this is a very complicated, you're really complicating the learning from the game, like from a learning perspective. We tunnel vision hardcore in the learning, because when we think about League of Legends, we think about your journey holistically. We don't really, we tend to think big picture, more long term when it comes to League. We don't think of what's going to lead to success in this one game or this one block. What's going to work for you? What's going to be beneficial for you in the wide majority of games? So we think of, okay, well, GeoIQ, that's going to be a very messy, you know, complicated learning experience. Okay, now the analogy that I think exemplifies this is, I want to take a trip down memory lane here. Back to, might be university, might be high school, a shared project at school.
People have lots of experience with shared projects in their education days.
That's right. So let's take, you know, maybe you're in high school and you got an assignment, a project.
A group project, right?
Let's say it could be a science project. You and your buddy, you get put up in pairs of two. It's all right, you two are together and you guys are going to study this topic and you're going to do some project on, I don't know, it could be anything. Let's just say you got to figure out how to study this mineral or whatever the hell it is in science. I don't know. And so you get paired up and you're like, all right, yeah, let's tackle this one together. And you got to try and figure out how to get the best possible grades while collaborating with your partner. Now, I'm sure many of you have had probably some positive experiences. You get paired up with someone that you enjoy working with, maybe a friend, or maybe you get paired up with someone that's really smart.
The smartest person in the class. Yeah. Someone who's just like, oh, yes, I got the nerd. Or you're like, oh, I got paired with the person that just doesn't give a shit. Yeah, doesn't even want to be there.
Doesn't even want to be there, right? Yeah. In which you know that you're going to have to do everything, right? Mm. And so it's a bit of an interesting situation, right? Immediately off the bat, you know that it can be either a relatively positive experience, or it could be a very negative experience, or it could be just a mediocre experience. Now, the reason I like this analogy is it's quite complicated, because I want to really dive deep into this. I want to look at it through the lens of, it is fundamentally a shared learning environment. You know, entering a shared learning environment. It's not just about me and the learning here and what I'm going to get out of this. It's about, you know, my partner as well in doing this project. Now, there are situations in which, you know, you work really well with your partner. You can collaborate really well. You can communicate really well with your partner. And you can actually, you know, kind of be greater than the sum of the parts, like 1 + 1 = 3. You might have
better efficient workflow. You can create a, you know, time.
Better quality product, even if you were to do it by yourself, because maybe they know things that you don't know.
Different
perspectives. You can have great communication. You can genuinely maybe even learn more than you would have otherwise by yourself. And this is because, again, maybe the personalities work well together. Maybe, again, you have some sort of relationship before that. And you can really riff off that. Maybe you have aligned values, which you both want to get the maximum grade, right? If you have alignment in the way you want to go about the project, even the way you work, how often you work, how much effort you want to put in, then it can be a pretty awesome experience, right? That could be good not only for your learning, but actually the end result, which you're going to be able to produce. But on the flip side, imagine if we don't have alignment. What happens if you're with someone that doesn't give a shit. Maybe they're actually, maybe they don't really care about the grade too much. Maybe you have differing perspectives on the topic itself. Maybe you're not aligned on the actual topic. Maybe you can't get aligned. Maybe the way you communicate and the way you fundamentally work together or enjoy working or tend to work is just fundamentally different. You can see where I'm going here. We're in duo queue, depending on, you know, the type of person or the person that you are duo queue with. It could be of either a very positive experience or a very negative experience. And that's just one of the many, many complexities that we're going to explore here. And I guess where I want to start here is let's talk about the complexities of working with another individual, the complexities with collaborating with another individual. I want to start there and then we'll go a little bit deeper.
So you don't want to start
actually in the interpersonal dynamics
or
here.
Or are you talking more about, we'll go into the actual game, how it affects in the game itself later. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
All right.
Let's talk about the challenges of just working with another individual. Okay. I mean, okay, I'll just start to get the ball rolling. The first one is, well, the reality is that we're not two pieces of AI. We're not two robots. So I might do something in the game, or I might say something that could potentially trigger you, right? I might say something like, oh man, the jungle is so active on the map. So I'm a mid laner and I'm doing my jungle. Oh,
so like passive aggressive statements.
I'm just saying, an idea.
Yeah, okay.
Right, this is one of the challenges. Yeah. I mean, we're working with someone, right? They're going to hear you and you're going to be communicating with them. And again, we face this in our competitive days back in the day. What if I say in the game, oh, Shaco came mid again? Now that could be a very harmless comment, right? I might say that, and in the game, I might not mean anything bad by it. But you say we're joined together. You hear that could piss you off. It's like, well, what does he want? He just got ganked. He misplayed. What is he talking about? Or you might say, oh, why does the mid have so much prior? Oh, he says prior again. Here we go. You know, you might say some offhanded comment that could potentially trigger me or create some sort of like a negative situation without even you realizing it. Now, obviously, again, if we're aligned and we have a really good relationship and I'm not afraid of conflict, I could actually go in there and I could say, hey, Nathan, can you shut the fuck up? Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear that. Just tell me what, let's get specific here. Or I could tell you how I want you to communicate or what I don't want to hear from you. But the reality is, how many emails do we get from the BBC about, oh yeah, I don't know how to approach my friend when he says this. He gets angry, I don't know what to do.
I just sit silent there.
And I just, yeah.
It makes me feel uncomfortable.
It makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't know. I can't confront him.
So other problems will be like misunderstanding of like what they may be meant in that situation. That's very common in competitive. Different straight up views of how to win the game. Like, this is the way I think you win this game. And in a fast paced game like League, you don't really have time to sit back and have that, that conversation or your review. You know, that's for the review. So again, these are more specific game ones.
Mental baggage, past experiences.
Yeah.
Right? You might have an idea of what you expect from that person, but maybe past
experience. Yeah, someone not meeting expectations.
Yeah. Maybe you have expectations about their level of intensity or their level of effort. Maybe you're doing a lot of your personal reviews, but you don't feel like they're doing their personal reviews and they're not getting, you know.
Or like they're playing champs that they don't main. Yeah.
Maybe they don't. Yeah. I mean, that's just one of the. Yeah, exactly. So I think what I'm trying to get across here is that there's a lot of invisible, under the surface, messy interpersonal things that are at play here.
Mm.
Okay. Just like there would be in a school project.
So yeah, you're saying humans complex.
Humans are complicated. There's shit there. And it's important to note that exists. Yeah. That is real and that exists. And it's important. We cannot overlook that
statement. It's not the sunshine and rainbows that people think. It's like, oh, cool. I'm just going to be, and we're just like the best friends. And like, when you're going in, like, even you would say that like the most famous like duos of like competitive stuff like that, like there's big conflicts in competitive.
Yeah, we just don't see it.
You just don't see it. It looks all good from the happies from the outside, but it's complicated.
Because when we think of duo queue, we think of like the stars aligned, champions yeah. are aligned, our views are aligned, our communication is flawless. We get into review together. It's all, we're winning games. We're, you know, it's all going well. But what happens when it doesn't go well?
Mm.
Again, there's the complexity of what happens when you start losing games. How does one person deal with adversity? What if one person vents? What if one person gets really tilted? How are you going to handle that? What are you going to do? You're going to just not joy the next game? You're going to play solo the next game? You've been joy to solo, then joy to solo? What are you going to do? Does one person believe in three blocks and the other person does believe in three blocks? Doesn't? I don't know.
It's like, yeah, again, going into their own personal one. And maybe it's like, I don't want you to talk about my lame phase here. Let me just, I'm going to figure this out by myself.
Even a lack of alignment, even in the review process itself. Maybe one person doesn't believe in reviewing the first 8 minutes, but he just wants to go over the major team fights. Maybe someone, again, maybe that guy's at a different stage of his journey. Maybe he has refined his early lane, but he's messing up India. He doesn't want to get into that early game stuff.
Yeah, it's just pointless to talk about. That's the other thing I was going to mention is that it just depends as well where people are in their league journey. Duo queue for two pro players would look much different from duo queue of like just two gold players or diamond plus players.
Because there is less, we actually spoke about this on another episode, Nathan, where the lower ELO you are, the more reasons you could be at that rank. Whereas the higher ELO you are, the less reasons you could be at that rank. Mm. There's less variables that you haven't covered. Right, we can all agree if you're two challenger level players, you're probably going to be at a, you know, we all know at least what you 100% know.
Must know. You have a pretty good game sense.
There's not many ways to get to challenge. Yeah. Like, there's not many ways to get to challenger. Yeah. There's a lot of ways to be gold.
Yes.
Okay, so that's that element of the whole package, right? Okay, going back to the project there. Okay. Now, I want to talk about optimizing for short term versus optimizing for long term. Now, in the case of a project, right, it's just one project, right? You're going to collaborate with that for that partner for one project. So you don't really need to be too concerned about, okay, maybe my partner's shit or maybe this doesn't work out. It's just one project. I don't really give a shit. It's not like we're going to be studying this topic again. We're just going to be doing this one topic and then moving on. And so, you know, let's say you work with them and it works out well, great, whatever. You get a good grade. You don't feel like you've sabotaged your own learning journey at all, even if it goes poorly, because it's a one-off. It's just one project. When it comes to league, we must think long-term, right? Because what matters in league is our underlying learning, the learning that we take from each and every game. Whereas in school, a lot of the time it's like you do a project on volcanoes or some shit, you know, what you do in high school. It's like, whatever the hell it is, you learn that topic and then you just move on. It's like, we're not going to visit volcanoes 2.0 in a year from now. You know what I mean? Like, whereas in league, everything that you learn is a personal journey and you're going to be following, like evolving that learning over and over and over again. You kind of see what I mean?
I want to work on this analogy a bit more because I'm trying to... The difference between like a group project and like duo queuing is that duo queue is like a agreement. It's like, we want to do this. We're going into this together. Mm. But a group project is more so like you just get thrown together and you're like, choosing your partner.
Right. I see.
You know what I mean? So well, that's like a big difference.
There might be scenarios where you do choose your partner in a group project though, right? I mean, they might say, all right, that's you guys go with that. But you have to be... I mean, you can't go solo. You might want to do a solo, but you have to do duo project.
Well, let's say that you get this group projects though. It's like, well, everyone has to do a group project, but you don't have to do it. So that's, I think, a part of the analogy. There is an element of
that. Okay.
Because the way people think about duo Curtis, just really simply put, is I have a higher chance of winning LP in the short term. Like, let's just...
In the short term. That's my point. That's what I wanted to kind of touch on in a weird way is that when it comes to duo queue, okay, we got to align. Are we optimizing for the short term or the long term? Okay, so when it comes to duo queue, in my opinion, there's only one way of kind of effectively doing it. Is that if you're going to duo, you got to duo all the time. You got to commit to that partner. It's like we're going deep.
Yeah,
we're going to duo all the time. We're going to go
live and die.
We're going to live and die by each other, and we are going to go on this shared learning journey. We're going to hold hands and go through this learning journey together. Right. And the reason for that is that you can actually develop your own unique toolkit to review and actually learn as a group, right? But if you're dueling with like a friend and you do that for 2 days or 3 days or a week, you know what I mean? Like you can't go from duo queue to solo queue. It doesn't work like that because it really ruins the learning journey.
Yeah, you're not getting anywhere.
You're not getting anywhere.
You duo with a new person every 2 weeks and you play a week with solo.
It doesn't make sense.
No.
Because the learning when you're duo queue, it's very, very different to how you're going to learn in a solo environment, right? Again, just tying back to the project. If you're doing a solo project, the environment in which you complete that project and the way you go about it, everything is going to be very different if you have to collaborate with someone. Now, and then again, let's go back to the toolkit, right? The toolkit for duo queuing, if you're going to make duo queue work, Nathan, what would it be? If you had to DuoIQ,
God, if what I was going to make it work. So this is really hard for me, Curtis. Again, people saying that, you know, people that know our stance, like that statement of the idea of the outcome with two people can be greater than one. For the ranked journey, I fundamentally believe the outcome is significantly worse when you're working with other people. You have to work by yourself.
Right.
It's way more efficient, actually.
Okay,
that way.
So then let's get into the challenges then.
Okay.
What are the challenges then in DuoIQ in your mind?
The challenges in DuoIQ.
What are the challenges? Major challenges of DuoIQ.
See, this is where I think we need to break it down for like rank and role.
Okay.
So I feel like that a jungler has significantly different challenges than the DuoIQ of like a bot lane, okay, right? Like, so let me talk from a jungler's perspective here, Curtis, because, you know, I'm a jungle coach and I've seen an unbelievable amount of students come into my program that their relationship with the game is completely ruined from DuoIQ. Their way of how they think about the game, how to win games, is very distorted. Jungle position, Curtis. Unless you're a jungler or you have a very high level understanding of the game, it's very difficult to understand what a jungler wants. Like, if let's say a goal player, what do they think about a jungler? They think that a jungler comes to my lane and then like I'm just getting targeted, or they don't see that the jungler might be losing options or being inefficient. Like, people have a very binary view, and junglers hate this, where they're getting dragged to a gank that they're going to, and then they're skipping camps for it, right? And then the gank doesn't go well, and they know it doesn't go
right.
So that's a huge part of what.
Okay, I want to even go. Yeah, so I totally get you, but I think we're assuming that. Yeah, we need to clarify why you believe that, right? So correct me if I'm wrong. You believe that, especially as a jungler, people from other roles, I'm assuming you mean lower elo brackets or every elo bracket?
I mean, even in masters.
Okay, even let's just say master below then. Let's ignore GM.
The general player base has a very poor misunderstanding of what a jungle role wants. What it is, what it wants.
The jungle role, and what does a jungler want?
What a high percentage plays for a jungler.
So basically, the main problem with that is that when you're getting into a game and then your duo partner is trying to make decisions, they're not factoring in
what you want.
Yes. They're only thinking about what they want.
They're very bad at putting yourself in the shoes of a jungler, and the jungler gets destroyed in competitive. We've seen many history of junglers that their careers get ruined quick because they lose a lot of confidence from coaches or other laners in their team, other pro players, and just for the communication as well. Like, you know, just think about your duo saying, come camp my lane. Like, what does that mean? That means nothing to me.
Yeah.
Like, that's not specific at all. It's not how the game works. Yeah. That's fairyland. There's so many elements to what a good gank is. It's like, what's my win condition? Well, if I show on the map, what do I lose? Can I gank now?
I see it all the time in my reviews.
You would see it in mid lane
where
as well.
They ping for assistance mid. I'm like, this is game losing.
There you go. They're not even DuoIQ.
They're ping for assistance.
You will lose the game from calling.
So then,
play.
But again, this is where I think short term versus long term. Right. I'm gonna jab back. I want this actually. This is interesting. Let's make this theme of this. You're against and I'm for, just for the sake of the argument.
All right, yeah.
And then we'll try to get into it, right?
Yeah, let's keep just attacking.
I want to keep attacking it.
Because there's so many different ways
to go. So many things.
We haven't really talked. I mean, we're touching on communication a little bit here, Curtis, but yeah. Like, now
we're opening a can of worms here.
The challenges.
So what you just said there is that, okay, let's say that person did. Let's say for example, you had two people joining in diamond, right? And then it was a mid jungle. And then that mid and jungle had obviously a lot of painful experiences because the mid was calling for terrible ganks. And the jungle's like, what the fuck? You know, I can't gank here. And then obviously they would have had to get into the review, and the jungler's having to educate the mid laner, like, I can't be here and this is why.
Or the case where they're not educated because they feel that they can't have that conversation. They're just dragged to it. And then you get, that's what happens.
That's where the interpersonal
shit
comes
into
play.
That's when you get so bad. And then you might just spite that person because you're like, well, this isn't working. They might not even know why it's not working.
So your point is that it's just fairyland to assume that a DuoIQ could even get into that discussion and the jungle could try to describe to the mid laner why this is a terrible play.
Because let me read this statement. So from my experience, people have a very large misunderstanding of the jungle role, what the jungler wants. But overall, no one knows what each other wants from all roles.
That's correct.
All right. So, so that's, but jungle's on the extreme because junglers can ruin games really quick because you're the X factor. You're the quarterback in the game. Like you're the one that's, especially in the early game, if you show on the map, that changes the game.
But people are going to, the argument are going to say in the chat, they're going to say, but aren't, this person's not going to know what any other one, anyone wants anyway, whether you're Jawiku or not.
Yeah.
And just I'm going to be on your side for a second. The reason that doesn't matter as much is because you're limited as to how you can influence those people. But when you're duo queue and you're on comms and you're talking with someone, you influence that person way more. For two reasons. Obviously, there is the voice, but also number two, there's a relationship there.
Yeah.
So that you trust, they're going to give your... what you say more weight. But if some idiot in solo queue starts pinging you to assist, essentially you don't give a fuck what they say. You're just going to mute them and move on, right? I do that all the time. Someone instantly pings me. I know that's a terrible way. Insta mute. There's no connection between me and that guy. But if that's someone, maybe like we're enjoying, you're saying, Curtis, you need to come, but you need to come. I'm like, I'm going to start doubting myself. Like, fuck, like, if Nathan's thinking this shit, you know,
especially if he's saying it in a way that's like, this is going to win us the game.
Exactly. And then also, this is where personality types come into play. Obviously, for me, you know, for us, you know, we're not afraid of, you know, holding our ground if we were in that situation. But a lot of people wouldn't have that confidence or maybe a belief in their own level of play. Or maybe they don't even just, they're not at a good level of their own. They don't believe they're good enough at the game. They're just going to think that they know better.
It goes even further than that, Curtis, though. If you want to be a good League of Legends player, you need to be as a jungler. You need to be aware of everything that's going on the map. That's your job, your role. Challenger player knows instantly whether that's going to be a good player or not. Without, like, you have to get to that point. Otherwise, that's what we're trying to chase.
That's what we're trying to chase.
Is a jungler. So, and this is again where our communication in League is super misunderstood, misrepresented. Because if I have to communicate to you, this is for gank specific, that this, I need to gank this, and the jungler wasn't able to pick that up themselves, that's their review. That's the end of review for the jungler, the fact that they have to.
And the reason this is the case is because League moves too fast, right? That's the main reason.
League moves slow, like in a way, like things are quite binary, especially in the early stages. Like this is either gankable or it's
so
not.
So you're saying that the jungler,
so it moves fast, but it moves slow. Like that's sort of the way League works. Like you're walking around the map slowly, collecting information. But if you're stuck on one side of the map, then you're just stuck there for it, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally get you. Like you want to get to the point as a jungler where nothing's... You already know exactly what you should and shouldn't do.
And
no
one is going to give you any information. You're just choosing what you prioritize. You're like, okay, I understand everything was happening on the map here. Given this information, I chose this versus I am going to this because someone's telling me going to this. And the League will never work well that way.
And objectively, right, people may say, well, okay, what if my information is giving me, what if my jaw is giving me correct information so I can make decisions faster? But again, the thing is, yes, like theoretically, if that duo queue, you were like completely aligned, you were both very high level players, you know, they give you information that they know that you wouldn't have been able to process. It's like incredibly refined, then sure. But even then, an argument could be made, well, it'd be better for that person not to have that information so that he can have that painful experience so he could actually learn that for himself. That's kind of what we believe, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And let's just also distinguish as well. We're not talking about pro play communication here. We're separating that from average solo queue experience and learning the game, even up to, you know, Master, Grandmaster Plus.
Yep.
The learning journey is significantly more efficient and productive solo.
Because this is my point. This is where, I was a bit lost the plot with the project analogy, but that's where I'm trying to get to, where in solo queue, we fundamentally, the only thing we should really care about in solo queue is optimizing for our learning. Because that's what's going to lead to rank, right? The learning we take from each and every game, not the result of one game.
Exactly right.
Right, whereas in a project, you don't give a fuck. You know, you don't care. It's not really, you're learning things, but you just want to get the best grade for that project and then move on. You know, that's where it's a completely different environment. That's where the analogy kind of breaks down.
Breaking down. It's good that we started with an analogy, then we sort of broke it down a little bit, how that's just where the reality different. Of where Jouroku.
Again, that's why Jouroku, so again, the theme of this where I want to, again, explore is Jouroku is a, is essentially a shared learning environment. And what I want to, what we want to need to explore here today are the complexities and challenges yes. of a shared learning environment. So we've already touched on the interpersonal stuff. You've now spoken a little bit about how the in a duo situation, many people from a jungler's perspective, other roles don't really understand what you want. So if they don't understand what you want, if they can't see the game through your lens, then they're just going to be a distraction, right? They're just going to give you wrong information. They're going to basically be a detriment to your decision.
People have been saying, like, I'm really good at seeing the game from their lens. That we don't really mean it's like I'm like empathetic to them. It's about like your skill level and your knowledge. Like your knowledge. Unless you play that role or you understand that champion or you're a very high level player, it's very difficult to know what they want in that moment. And what great teamwork communication is in league is when everyone knows what each other wants. And there's so many aspects of that, you know, like item spikes, you know, there's so much game knowledge in terms of that. That has to be there for there ever to be that idea of I understand what they want.
Okay. Okay, so let's go back then to you're for, you're against, I'm for. So let's go to another challenge, right? Actually, let's go through the roles. So you're saying jungle. Let's go through the different roles. So let's say bot lane, right? That's a very cool.
No, let's do the solo laners first, Curtis.
Okay, so what do you want to go top,
just
top mid?
Just really quick here, top mid. Hmm. League of Legends in top mid is a solo game for the first 10 minutes of the game. 15,
like nine.
More or less.
Well, it depends. Mid and top are different, I think. Mid's like you're basically in the isolated one for like first 8 minutes, and then post 8 minutes, then it's kind of sketchy. But top's like different. I think you're in a solo game for a long time. Maybe 15 minutes.
So we need to establish that fact. It's a pure solo game. Let's say, for example, you might be a jungler. You might be giving information where the enemy jungler is. Yeah, that might be helpful, but that's something that you should have a good idea.
Okay, I'll speak. I'm the mid laner here, right? Yeah. So from a mid laner's perspective, right? You know, look, objectively, it would be helpful to have a jungler saying, okay, I want to contest these grubs or whatever it is. And they give you heaps of warning and they give you information about what they're going to do, right?
That might change how you reset or play.
Yeah, it might change how I reset and stuff. That is objectively true, but again, a very high level mid laner should already be kind of preparing or have a pretty good hunch. It's like, we have a stronger top side. I should probably be wanting grubs anyway. Like the level you want to get to as a mid laner is that it's like, okay, I had a review today, right? Where it was he was playing Trinity mid, which is weird, but he was playing Trinity mid and he had a Rumble top into a Teemo, and Rumble's getting a shit ton of prior. I think Solo killed Teemo early. And I think he had a Sylas jungle. They had just a way stronger, like top side 3v3. And so what I said, I literally said this, I said, you got to get a base at around 4:30 so you can get back on the map, and then we want to be doing grubs on spawn. Like,
you don't need a duo to tell you that.
That's objectively the correct play. Now, yes, that person would have made a better decision in that game if he was duoing with a jungler and the Sylas said, I want grubs on spawn. But does that mean, yeah, sure, we're again optimizing for that one game. But again, that Trinity
long term, there's no
lane. And what that Trinity did instead, instead, he stayed, he elongated the lane, greeted for a freeze, froze under his tower, his Sylas went on to grubs, and then they lost grubs. I said, this is why you reset at 4:30 here. And that's because there was no communication whether Sylas was going to do grubs. I knew that Sylas was going to want to do grubs because of the topside situation. That's just game knowledge, that's just experience, that's just understanding the way the game should be objectively played. That's the most best play, right? So that Trinity had a really good learning journey, right? Learning cycle. He had made a decision, had a painful experience. He's not having prior for grubs. Why? Let's get into that. And then we can learn. And then we can move on and we can develop. But if his jungler called that, the chances that he's actually going to complete that learning cycle by himself, he could. His jungler could tell him, and he might have the level of introspection to be like, you know what? I should have known that. But I call bullshit. Like, that's just not going to happen. No. You know, it's very, very unlikely.
Yeah.
Very, very unlikely.
If someone has an idea for an objective, especially a jungler, they will
So my point being is that, yes, I'm not going to sit here and say that it wouldn't be helpful to have someone giving me information. Yes.
The way that I'll think about it is that that's just one positive, and that just does not close outweigh all the negatives.
Exactly. It's one positive.
It's like one nitpick. This is, again, where people think that Jiroku's all fairyland. They will look at that point. That's awesome. But that's just like one aspect of
one aspect.
Like, if you just lose lane, bad res, all the fundamentals, like, it doesn't matter who you're playing with, who, what is Jiroku, how good everyone is, you're going to, you know, you're going
to
struggle.
Yeah, so that is one aspect. But again, it's important to say, again, objectively say that it would be objectively helpful in that situation.
Yeah.
And I would make a better Glory decision in that situation. Long term, it doesn't help my learning, though.
No.
So from top, I think it's very similar. It's a very exact
it's a solo situation. Game.
It's like, would be helpful for a jungler to give you particular information, whether it be about the enemy jungles, not about them. It could even be they're a second set of eyes and they're able to give them information about what's happening. Oh, their jungler's doing this path. Again, the top laner should already be considering what the jungler is doing based on what you're doing with the waves. If you're on red side as a top laner and your jungler's pathing top to bot and their jungler's pathing bot to top, that has to be a variable that is considered when it comes to what you're doing with your waves.
Or I look at the map quickly in my lull state as a top laner. I see bot lane fully warded. The enemy jungler is not there. I would assume he's probably around topside. Again, if you are reliant on communication for that, we need work to do with your gameplay, that's because that's part of your job in League of Legends.
It's part of the game of League.
Yes.
Being able to utilize your
map awareness, game sense.
That's right. Okay. What are the other...
established mid and top.
Okay, so
that's why Jiroku's not that helpful, because it's mainly a solo game for most of the game, and the early game is pretty big part of League of Legends because of the snowball aspect of the game.
Well, that's that, but it's also, again, it's the short-term versus long-term.
That's right, and that too as well. All right, bot lane, Curtis. Bot lane. So this is where we're maybe going a bit more uncharted territory because we we've never played... I mean, you and I have played a lot of support.
Never duoed.
You know? So I guess in theory, if you duo and then you get to play certain 2v2s, and 2v2s matchups are pretty important.
Yeah.
Setting up, like, let's say for example the most popular ones like Caitlyn Karma or something like that, like if you duo queue and you're pretty good at that specific, you can roll over a game together.
Look, I'm gonna say it outright, I just think bot lane duo queue is a different beast.
It's
completely different, and I think it's good. I think it genuinely would work.
Yeah,
and it would be, I think it would be 100% more of, I mean, I think the positives of duo queuing in bot lane would outweigh the negatives, in my opinion.
Well, this is interesting though, because then can't this go down that whole thing of narrative of like, okay, I go into solo and my supports suck. Then suddenly their expectations is, and then their relationship again ruins, again, and then they can only duo.
Again, this is why I firmly believe if you're going to duo, you got to fucking think long term. You got to go all in.
You're just a bot duo. Yeah.
But then you're screwed master plus.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of the other challenges, right? But I think, look, okay. In terms of, okay, so let's be very careful here. I think we can all agree. I think you'd be an idiot to think otherwise, right? If you're not going to... A duo queue would be more effective than two solos in bot lane. And we can safely agree on that, right? You get a diamond, two diamond four that are duo together and played a bunch of games together.
Yeah.
And they're actually really thoughtful about their combination. They're communicating well. They're going to shit on, or they should theoretically shit on, two solos. Even if the enemy are probably maybe a little bit better individually, the duo will probably come out. That would be my hypothesis. I'd like to think so. Actually, I want to reframe that. I don't think you'd have to be an idiot, but I think that would be a solid hypothesis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd love to hear from the community on this one. I'm sure we have 80 carries and supporters who listen to this.
I mean, we have examples. I mean, again, it depends what, guess what rank, right?
I mean, we used to get shit on by bot lane joys all the time back in the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, let's say if you were in against like two pro players... A big problem with duo queue in Master Tier Plus was
it ruined the game.
Two player, like if you had like Caitlyn Karma or something, a bot, like it's literally like almost impossible to win a game.
I have nightmares when duo queue was enabled against Master Blast with pro players. Yeah. It was unplayable.
Jungle mid, I don't care about duo. Jungle top mid, that doesn't matter, but it's just bot.
Bot.
Yeah.
When you had King and Aladoric, whatever, playing duo queue on bot side, or back in the day with like Radiant and stuff, I mean, it was just, you couldn't win the game. I mean, that would be so far ahead, it would be unbelievable.
Too much pressure.
Way too much pressure. Remember King Destiny, duo queue back in the day. Yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, so Yeah, okay, that's a hypothesis. We don't know 100%, but I think we're pretty confident that would be the case, right? That would be better in that game.
Yeah, but then you sort of got to think about it. The way that matchmaking would work then in that situation is that you're going to have technically lower rank on the top side, like the MMR will be balanced, so then you have to like really win bot lane.
Yeah, there's more pressure. People don't understand that about JoyQ at all. We talk about that. So the matchmaking. So the way matchmaking works is that if you JoyQ, your team, so there's either two options or a handful. So the first one is you're going to have the lower rated members on your team and the enemy can all full solos and you're going to have lower rated members on your team. So that's scenario number one. Scenario number two is you versus another Joy. So that kind of balances it out. Scenario number three is you get off roll. So the same rank, but they're off roll. So you get like a mid who's top and then a top who's mid and shit like that. Now, they're the three kind of scenarios, I would say, right? Now, that puts a lot of pressure on you as a bot lane, because if you don't win your lane pretty hard, and you don't quote unquote carry, you're going to lose. It's straight up. It's all on you in a way when you do a bot lane. You have to perform and the pressure is on you.
And that's why, you don't see it at the end of the day. You don't go into the ADC or support mains and you see that the only way that people would just abuse this climb, it actually doesn't work a lot of the time, even duo bot. So again, even though you're saying that there's benefit, the facts are in anyone that you've sort of see gold, bronze, diamond and stuff like that. Again, unless you're sort of in the pro player bracket, it doesn't actually, it's not that effective.
And you know, that's also why, by the way, I feel like I've had a lot of success with secondary bot lane, because I feel like if I can minimize bot and I play Ziggs and I minimize bot, it like mental booms the game.
Yeah, that's right.
It actually booms the game because
you can stall the game.
Because that is the counter towards your bot in a way. If you can go, if your secondary role or you're like off road, you play bot lane, you minimize. And you know, that means your top side is going to win a lot of the time. That's like a free way to win. It's actually a really free way to win. Mm. So optimizing for the game. But again, the challenges that come along with being a Joy bot lane, right? Everything that we've explored before, we've seen this in real life. We've literally been in a gaming house where we've seen bot lanes implode for all the multitude of reasons. The lack of alignment, the way they want to play, the matchups they want to play, the lanes they want to play, the way they want to play the lanes.
Just mechanical errors from each of them.
Yeah, mechanical. We went through a whole stint, I'm not going to name names, of a specific iteration of Direwolves when we were back in the day, where the support was underperforming. The support was not playing well mechanically. And the AD carry was getting really pissed off. And it got to the point where, you know, the AD carry wasn't trusting his support. And we had to alter the picks that the support was going to pick because the support...
Going to just stuff up mechanically.
He was going to just stuff up mechanically. Yeah. And so there was a lot of complexity. Again, it's all good when it's sunshine and rainbows. But what happens when you get that 0-3 block? What happens when shit hits the fan? You guys don't play well. Your Joy makes a mistake. There's going to be awkward silence. What's going to happen? Are you going to sit on there? It's going to be muted there on Discord. Are you going to talk to them about it? You're not going to talk to them about it. Are they going to go and talk to the other friends, start joining with someone else? There's all this complexity, this human nature shit that you just got to, we got to accept that it's reality. We can't just sweep it under the rug. And again, this ties into the whole theme of this episode, which is when we think of JoyQ, we tend to think of it as fairyland, all the positive experience and never the negatives. And I'm guarantee you it. You guys should all think back. All those times where you guys have joyed. Think about those awkward silences in Discord or Skype back in the day or TeamSpeak, whatever the hell you used, where you JoyQ with someone and they've underperformed. Right? Now, look, if you're two very, aligned individuals and you can have that tough conversation with each other and you're very supportive of each other, great. Thumbs up. Is that usually the case?
From my experience.
From our experience, almost never. Exactly. So that's an interesting one. I think bot lane is an interesting one. I think it's very different to the other ones. I think it's important to make that distinction.
I agree.
And I like what you said there about the ranked anxiety when there's no JoyQ. What happens when you can't Joy? What happens when you get mastered to your plus?
Yep. Yeah, I generally have... I remember having I had an Eve player that always Joy... Or literally only always Joy. He'll rotate between people. And... he would, he barely even played because he had to wait for his Joys all the time, right?
That's one of the other challenges.
Right.
Yeah,
that literally logistics of playing. So it was just the biggest struggle and he couldn't play the game solo anymore. So basically he's ruined his whole league experience. He can't play the game solo, which I think is such a shame.
That is such a shame.
I just don't think you can go down the duo. It's just not practical from a time standpoint. When was that person quit? So You know what I mean? It's just not.
Yeah, what if they don't want to play? What if they go on a holiday?
Yeah. Or they, yeah, go get. It's like, what, you know what I mean? It's just, that's just so. It's such weird. A shame. That's not how leagues are meant to be, you know?
Okay, one of the big challenges, actually, I want to go back to now, holistic challenges of Joy Q. And this is something that I definitely felt back in the day when I did see a bit of Joy is feeling like I'm like getting mind controlled by my Joy, just subconsciously by being in a Joy.
Curtis, you know what people will say? I say the danger is I don't get affected by a Joy. People
bullshit.
That is the biggest cope.
Yeah.
I've ever heard. It's not reality. You will subconsciously get influenced by your duo, no matter what. Even if they don't even say anything, just the fact that their presence is in the game, you're going to do little things differently.
You're going to do things differently, and that's the number one problem. And it feels terrible because, you know, you make a decision that you fundamentally don't believe in. It doesn't work, but you don't have that learning because you didn't commit to your call. You didn't commit to your decision. And that's, again, the way I view duo, the number one, I'm going to just say it outright, the number one problem with duo is this. Right, this is across all roles, all ranks. This is it. Is that you're interfering with the learning cycle. It's that simple. Someone else is influencing your hypothesis. It's not your hypothesis. Therefore, when the result happens, the learning, you can't own the learning. You cannot own the learning because it's not truly your learning.
It's like a skin in the game or like your responsibility. It's like, well, this is not my play, so I'm just going to follow
it. Or you know subconsciously that you've been influenced by that person, so you know it's not
really... You've got an easy cop-out as well.
Very easy excuse.
That's a subconscious thing.
That is the beauty of solo queue. It forces you to take max... It's the only way. Maximum responsibility. There is no one else but you. You are the only sole factor and contributing factor. Joy queue adds so much complexity. Doesn't it? So much complexity to your journey because now it's just not you. It's someone, a whole nother person there is interfering with your learning journey. It's not just you. And that is the beauty of solo queue. It's you in the shit, in the mud, having to crawl your way out of it and figure out a way and develop a toolkit to do so. And it's convenient, ticks all the boxes.
That's another thing as well that I think, you know, people have the mindset of I go in, duo queue, I increase my chances because I don't have three, you know, bots on my team. I think that's another reason why people duo queue is that they don't want to be accountable for the game. That is another reason why people would duo.
It's an ego, it's a protection, defense mechanism in a way, 100%. And if you fail, it's like, you know, it's not only you, you fail with someone else. You've got someone else to share that burden with in a way. You know, this is an interesting experiment here. I want to do a thought. What do they call it? Like a thought experiment.
A thought experiment. Yep.
Imagine for a second that league there was no solo. It was only duo. Now that doesn't even make sense logistically. But let's just say hypothetically, you could only queue up as a party, or let's say twos or threes. That makes sense. Yep. Right? And such that. You know, we played the game for the past 14 years with only duos and trios. And then one day, magically, a new rank system came out where it was only solo. What do you think would happen?
I think that the junglers would be the worst players. they would be the worst players and that would be destroyed.
Right.
That's okay. I know what will happen for a fact.
Yeah.
Like a gold jungler in the team play would be bronze.
Yeah, that would be shocking. That would be shocking. Okay. What else? What else do you think would happen?
What else would happen?
Try to visualize that. Do you think you would be excited? Do you think that you would be excited or do you think no one would play it?
I think everyone would be excited because they're all losing their minds playing with each other and not getting anywhere.
I think everyone would think, holy shit. This might, again, me going through this whole process. Holy shit. Finally a chance to prove who's really the best.
Yeah, there you go. Yes.
That's it. That's simple. It's like, oh my God, I've been having to deal with Jim Bob and bloody, you know, whatever his name in duo queue, and they're so annoying. Okay, let's see who's really good. We're on an even playing field now.
I want to see where I'm at.
I want to see where I'm at. I want to see where everyone's at. I think that's what everyone would be begging for.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just do the opposite. You know what I mean? Like, you just think of it like that.
Yeah, I guess it's really simple.
Really simple.
Yeah.
You don't know. This is what I've realized with League. and we've seen this time and time again with Lee, you don't know what we take. We just take Lee for granted. We fucking do. We bitch and moan. People bitch and moan about, you know, how shit Lee can be, about balance or trolls and MMR rank and, oh my God, emeralds are possible to get through, right? And the reality is that League is we've got it good here. We've got a great balanced game. You can play basically any champ in the game to a very high level. Roles are relatively balanced. You can climb with every role, every type of champion.
Yep.
It's fucking ridiculous. You have solo queue.
It's crazy.
A fucking awesome rank system.
Yeah.
We've got it pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You know, when you really think of it, you know?
I know. Like, well aware of that, Curtis. I've come from many other competitive games, and
I like putting that out there. I think
we always need to put that out there.
It's important. It's important. It's a message of the BBC.
It is. Like, God, man. Like, come on. Let's have some fun playing League. Let's have some fun. It's a great game.
Okay, so we've covered a lot here.
Okay, so Curtis,
what are you moving on to?
I want to talk about playing with people or Duoku when you're new to the game.
Mm.
See, this is where I think that there is massive value. Like, I'm talking about leveling up to 30, just playing with friends. Mm. That's how a lot of us got into the game, right? Playing with friends, teaching them, you know, it's like, oh, this is what this champ does. And like having that, because we talk, you know, we don't want to be that serious, like at the beginning. You know how we say, just play every champ. Don't too much about process. That's what we talk about. So like 1 to 30 and even maybe a bit beyond that, normal games experience. But when it's like, okay, I want to see where I'm at playing, you know, your first games in Iron Bronze, then that shouldn't be in a Duo experience at all.
I think it's a really good point. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I think it's really handy. Imagine having someone, you know, showing you the ropes.
Just quickly telling you, this is what this champ does. This is, you know, I think that would speed up your learning journey significantly.
I like it. I think it makes sense.
So that's where I think it is very, but again,
that's not really Duo Q.
That's just like normal games.
Yeah, just playing with people, right? Yeah, it's partying up.
But it's still worth to mention, right? Because it's like, you know, people be like, you guys are just, you know, do you only solo?
But the way I thought you were talking about is like when you first play ranked, like Iron, your first ranked games with Duo Q.
Oh, yeah, that's completely.
It's game over.
Yeah, it's absolutely game over.
It's absolutely game over. That's like the worst thing you could possibly do, I think. One of the worst things.
Yeah, because I guess it's the blind leading the blind, right? Especially, let's say there's two, like I was just trying to think, like I said, there's just no winning scenario. If there's two Iron players or Bronze, it's the blind leading the blind, and you're just completely ruining each other's experience of the game. And if you're getting, you know, playing with a person that's a bit higher rank playing thing, then you're just purely just getting...
you're not having any learning.
You know, you're getting ELO boosted or getting like...
boosted, yeah.
You know, you're going to be just sort of where you actually are on the rank ladder. And if you're, let's say you're drawing your gold friend.
Yep.
That will completely, as you said, it's game over.
Absolutely game over.
Let's just say there's a deep hole we'd have to dig ourselves out of.
Very, very much so.
I think it's so funny, Curtis, that you try to go, it's like, Nathan, I'll be like the 4 year against.
Yeah, it's hard. Curtis, I'm dragged. It's really overwhelming when you get into it.
Because, Curtis, the honest truth is that we've had seen so many of our students, people in our program, so many people write into this show where Duo Q is detrimental.
I don't think we have seen yet a positive Duo Q experience.
If you've had a positive Duo Q experience,
let us know. I'm sure they exist.
Yeah,
I'm sure they exist.
Would exist in isolation in certain time. Again, or if we think about over the long run, I would say we wouldn't ever see that.
Right.
You know, like people say, I might say like, oh, a duo with like my, you know, my friend in like platinum, like we like learned a lot about something like that, you know, but it's like, you know, you're not going to maintain that. It's just not going to work in the long run.
Mm.
It's going to hurt you more.
Yeah, but maybe that's what Duo Q is. Maybe the best way to do Duo Q is you do it in a stint. You do it in a way to learn some specific element of the game or something, or I don't know.
Let me know. I would.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I want to stay as open-minded as possible here. If there is someone listening who has had a positive Duo Q experience, let us know and let us know get specific.
Yeah, get specific. I would need to see OPGs. You need to tell me which times you think
how long did it go for?
Would have interesting recollections of their Duo Q experience as well. Like honestly, like as bad as this is sound, I don't feel like I would trust people writing in unless I saw. Like, even, like, games where they duoed with each other stuff. Because I could just start dissecting things.
Because you're getting an email saying, oh, yeah, 5 years ago, me and my mate had a few beers and played Duo Q.
Years ago, the game was different. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's... I would take that with a grain of salt, even if someone was to write that in.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Hey, what else did you want to cover here in reference to Duo Q here?
I want to touch on just communication a little bit more, just writing down our thoughts there.
Okay.
People have a very when people think about communication in League of Legends, they think about macro calls, right? Like, that's what they think, right?
Yeah, right, interesting.
Like, it's like macro call. Like, they hear, like, things like, oh, let's go, we're going to fight this dragon, we're going to call front to back in these fights and stuff like that. Communication in a solo queue, a ranked perspective, because it's, like, really, the duo queue, like, emphasizes the communication aspect, you're basically completely throwing out champ mastery, the way that I think about it. Like, the moment you're in that mindset of communication, champ mastery is gone.
Let's, I want to frame it a different way. I'll be honest. I don't resonate with that.
Okay.
I need to think high level first and get into the detail, right? So the way my brain works with this is that there are different types of communication, but in order to even, like, why communicate? What's the problem? Why is League hard? Okay. Why is League hard? I want to break it down to the three, the three categories of problems. Gathering information is challenge number one. Processing information is challenge number two. And execution is challenge number three. I would say these are the three main reasons, or every mistake in League can basically be boiled down to these three categories, okay? Now, either one of them or many of them, okay? Gathering of information is difficult in League because there is just so many pieces of information to look at, and let alone what information to look for, right? So it's like you press tab. It's like, well, what the fuck do I look at? What's important? What's not important? And actually, the raw process of literally using a lull state to gather information, especially for a laner, it's probably easy for a jungler, get more downtime. But as a laner, it's hard. Gathering information is hard, especially when the game's moving quick, things are changing, it's hard. So that's one challenge. Now, communication can actually help with that, right? Because you got someone can give you information. Hey, jungler's on bot side. Dragon's coming up in 30 seconds. Support's missing. This is not process. This is pure gathering of information, okay? That's number one. Number two is processing information, that's where macro comes into play. This is actual decision-making. An example in communication of this category would be, we should start Baron on spawn. You should hover me topside. I need you to help me get out this wave. Right, so the communication in relation to some sort of macro-oriented decision. Now, processing information is a challenge in League because, again, it's not overly obvious what we need to do in a particular moment, right? So I guess one of the positives of communication is that, again, you could get someone aligned with what you want to do, or tell someone what to do. Maybe you have a very clear idea about how to win the game, and you can really communicate that effectively, really simply, without having to fuck around with pings and typing, right? And the third one is execution. I think that's just not really applicable here.
Yeah. I think where you're struggling to get my point about the communication there is that, yes, people think about communication in terms of macro, which is helpful. Yes.
Yes.
That's where communication actually is most effective in League, in the mid game and stuff like that. But that's not what most of the game is what I'm saying.
Interesting. I was actually going to say the other way around. I don't think that is helpful.
What's not helpful?
Because I was actually going to say that macro stuff's not helpful. I think what is helpful is the gathering of information.
Oh, gathering information.
Because when I think of optimal communication in duo, let's say if I had to duo.
Oh, the gathering information. Yes, like the flash timers and that sort of stuff.
If we were to duo, right, and we had to make it work.
Yeah.
The way we would make it work.
Here's the information, you make the decision.
Exactly. I don't want to hear what you want me to do. I don't even want to know what you're going to do. You just tell me information that you think is relevant. So it's like we're fighting dragon and you say, Jhin has no flash. Like that's good information. Like, yep. That's helpful. That's very really helpful.
Yeah.
We say, Nico has no R. Things like that. Like things that are very, like, very key pivotal pieces of distilled, specific, relevant information. Right?
Yeah.
That's more, that is, in my opinion, the, if we all had to communicate with Joku, that would be the way, that's the most effective
thing. Yeah, but then again, you would argue again, it's like, you know, a challenger player, they should, you know, where everyone gets through, from a solo perspective, it's much more efficient if they know that information that doesn't need to be said. And they should be able to know that. Like, a Nico ult, that could be quite obvious when that's happening.
Mm.
A flash, like a jungler, you know, using FKs and stuff like that. Like, that is the skill of the game, is a massive part of the skills, information collection for yourself.
Sure.
And you have to build that skill. There's no way around that. yeah, you can get patched up a little bit, but again, the patching up, that's more competitive, you know, in a
yeah,
way.
So I see what you mean. You're viewing communication in this sense as a band-aid solution.
Yeah, it's a band-aid solution.
It's a band-aid solution. You should be able to, you should be gathering this information yourself.
Yes.
And
it's way more efficient when you do that yourself, because then you don't, you know,
you're not relying.
So fast paced. It's like you're going to be approaching that fight already knowing that this person has, you know, maybe they're, you know, let's say in a fight, ults and flashes are a bit more big, but let's say Zeri just used her E or whatever, you know what I mean? Like you should, it's too slow by the time that's been communicated.
Right.
You're already not ready to capitalize on that.
Right. So I totally agree with you. Again, this is thinking more long-term, right? Long-term for the learning. But I will say, again, if we're optimizing for the short-term, what would give us the most success in the short-term, you giving key pieces of information would help.
Yeah. So I guess this whole conversation's been about, short-term, long-term, communication, exactly. Duo, yeah.
So communication, again, that's why I think communication is distilled into really two things. You're either giving information, right? Key piece of information, or you're giving directives, which is relating to macro, and this is relating to processing information, right? I think that the stuff about directives and macro is probably the worst form of communication, because that means that if you're having to tell someone what the best thing to do in terms of the game, what the best macro decision is, you're not aligned at all.
No.
If we're at Joy-Q-ing and then you're having to say, Curtis, why are you going bot Baron's up? Or like, we should be playing for Baron. No shit.
Yeah, it's like, too late. Again,
that means we're not on the same level. That means we shouldn't even be doing it in the first place. That means that we're just not even on the same level. Like, again, that at that point, you're 100% compensating for them, and you're 100% sabotaging their learning journey. I need to fail in that situation. If I'm making a play bot when Baron's up, I need to have that painful experience. I need to then lose Baron. You know, I don't want you to tell me to not go for that play. You know what I mean? And that's where it goes into long-term, short-term. And that's really where I think it is. It's that simple. Now, you've got a point. You want to move on?
Yep.
You've got a point here that says...
I mean, we covered a lot about the communication there in that other segment, talking about the jungle and how that affects things and stuff. So I think that I just wanted to just wrap it up a little bit there, just to touch on a little bit more.
Should Riot remove Jiwoku altogether?
From ranked. So there's one, competitive integrity, right? The ranked ladder would be more polished of exactly where everyone should be.
Mm-hmm.
This is the interesting thing, you know, talking about, you know, we've talked a lot about Riot as sort of mixed messaging about what ranked is, and they're pretty bad about that. It's like the fun, you know, is it more fun to play with your friends? It's like, well, should that be a different client or different, you know, you're going like, okay, I'm having fun with friends versus I'm here to go into the dojo, blood, sweat, and tears, right? It muddies the waters a bit. Like because people would think about Juroku as like a social thing, right? So at the end of the day, a lot of people play games with the social aspect, right? So it's like a more of a fun thing, right? So just removing that, you know, hurt the player base, but in the long run, maybe make the game more serious. Like everyone knows it's hardcore. So they're sort of the challenges, I guess.
Yeah, look, I don't think Duo at the moment is actually a problem, because I think Riot have actually figured out a really, really effective ways to balance Duo.
Yeah, with their matchmaking. I think so as well. And yeah,
like I think they've managed it for now. Look, I don't.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a big.
It's not really a big problem.
All, no.
It's not really a big problem. No. I do think it's a problem. Master Plus.
Yeah,
I'm glad they did. They made that adjustment. And they did that. But I think that to have it for the general community. Look, I agree with you. I think it would be way neater and tidier and just make more sense if you just had solo queue and then flex queue. Like, that would be so much simpler. Like, let's just, like, cut the crap. You have solo. It's a very hyper-competitive environment. We know what it's about, you know. And then you have flex queue, which is a little bit more casual, still maybe a bit competitive, but you know it's a different ball game. It's a different thing. I think that would make more sense. That's just my two cents. But I can understand why Riot would probably want to keep it in.
It's a bit more of a player base going.
Yeah, and I really think what the way... I'm going to try and read the mind of Riot. I think what they're probably thinking is that it's a great way to ease people into ranked. Maybe there's a lot of people that are scared of playing ranked, and it's like, okay, maybe their friend can play a game with them or two and then ease them into it, then they're okay. But even though we know that's bullshit and that's not like the way it works, that person who's scared of ranked and gets joy, is they're not going to play ranked long-term anyway, in my opinion. But I can see why the Riot executive team would want that to be a thing, right? I'm just visualizing the boardroom and everyone's sitting around and there's like a, it's like,
I mean, they've probably had this conversation so many times.
It's on the agenda. It's like, okay, we're going to be talking about GeoIQ, should we? And it always comes up as, oh, it's good to have, too scary, we're going to annoy too many people, we remove it. It's kind of like one of those legacy things that it's been around in the game for so long. Like, it's like, oh, we can manage it for now. It's probably, we're going to piss more people off by getting rid of it than pleasing people if we, you know what I mean? If we get rid of it. It's just one of those things. So I think, because if GeoIQ never existed in the first place, no one would even be complaining about it. It's just because we've had it. When you take something away from people, it pisses people off.
Yeah.
So I think it's just one of those.
It's probably not worth the hassle, I agree.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I don't think it's that big of a problem. The only problem I did see was Master Plus.
So why was it a problem for you, Master Plus, Nathan?
What we talked about before, about the the GeoIQ aspect. The there was like that whole situation of like MMR, like you could be like a master tier player playing with someone like D, and then like you're boosting the MMR, they keep losing their D1 programmers and stuff like that. There's lots of weird things. It's just, again, and the competitive integrity as well. It's like, I mean, maybe master is maybe too, like, maybe they should do it for only Grandmaster Plus, maybe, since there's a lot more master players nowadays. Maybe,
you know, I want to, I'm gonna say something here controversial about this. When this initially happened, I thought this was an amazing thing. And look, I do think it has a lot of benefits. But I'll say this. GeoIQ Master Plus wouldn't be a problem, okay, if it was only bot lane duos. Like for example, you know what I mean? Okay. So let's say like a bot lane duo had to pop into a bot lane duo. Maybe that wouldn't be too bad. But again, the challenges you face then is that Master Plus is just not many players. So the matchmaking could get messed up.
That would be so hard, yeah.
It'd be so hard. It would ruin queue times. Or one of the other things as well is what I hated was this is what we saw all the time. You would get a team on the enemy team that had duo. And to offset that, the other team would be off roll. But then they would say, just swap.
Swap, yeah.
In the champs league. That is what fundamentally, if there was no chatting, no swapping, and everyone had to play the role that they played, then it would be fine. But that's not what happens in reality. You get, you know, you get what we had is like two, you know, 700 LP players duo-queuing together, and they say, okay, we're going to give the enemy team the same, like 700 LP players, but then the mid lane is playing support and the top's playing jungle, right? But then they all say, oh, I don't play jungle, I don't play top, you'll swap around, you'll get your main roles. And it's like, well, what the fuck? This doesn't make sense whatsoever. And it's not balanced at all. And because swapping is a thing and people actually really try to get their role, it breaks the system. Swapping and the whole changing role shit breaks the system. So that's why GeoIQ, I guess, can't work. As long as that function is in play, it can't work.
Yeah, it can't work because, it just explodes.
It explodes the matchmaking. And then again, the issue you face is that a mid-jungle duo is nowhere near as effective as a bot lane duo. So unless you can somehow guarantee that it's a bot lane duo versus a bot lane duo, it's just never fair. There's just not enough player base to
so that's where you would be fine with it.
If the player base Master Plus was so large that you could guarantee two bot lane duos against each other, then that would be fine. Mm. But we don't live in a world in which that's the case. No. So it's that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last sort of topic here is, so there has been a lot of conversation around GeoIQ and Master Tier Plus, because like look at the good old days where like, you know, the streamers and stuff could duo with each other and really help the general interest of the game. You know, people like, oh, look at how fun, you know, that is. You know, it's like, you know, two friends, you know, get into the high ranks together and, you know, they're taking against other pro players or something like that. And that's why people have the argument to bring sort of duo back around that, just for just general interest in the streaming culture and stuff. But again, I think in the long run, I think it just has more negatives than positives. What do you think?
I mean, I mean, look, I think we can all agree that if you had Jor and Master Plus, it would be better for the streaming community. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But again, at what cost? It's at what cost? You know, ranked integrity, matchmaking integrity. For the people that are genuinely trying to climb Master Plus who don't have a Jor partner or don't give a shit about streamers, then yeah, it's good for everyone else. But at the expense of a lot of people. So in my opinion, it just doesn't really make sense for competitive integrity. You need to have a place. I mean, the most important thing, right? The way Riot die, the way League dies, is that they fuck with the ranked integrity.
That's right.
Competitive integrity.
It's probably a simple
thing. That is the cornerstone of League success. a very solid rank system. That's extremely fair,
challenging.
Robust.
Yeah.
It works. As long as that exists, League will be in a good position. As soon as they mess with that formula, that is when shit goes crazy.
100% agree.
So yeah, look, we've tried to cover a lot of stuff here. Hopefully, this episode is, can live here on the BBC, and we can refer this to people who ask about Duoku.
Yep, just point them here.
I would love. I'm very fascinated. Yeah. I want to be open-minded. If we get some very high-quality comments on this one about Duoku, who it gives us a different perspective, we will touch on it on the next episode. I think it's important to hear from the community. Yeah. I genuinely want to see what people have to say about this, because there are people out there we've seen that are very passionate about Duoku. I want to hear why. What did we miss? If we missed anything, let us know.
What do you reckon? I'd love to do like a case study. Like if someone comes to us saying Duoku's awesome, this is how we learn.
And they gave a really thorough response.
But they actually sent us like 10 games.
Right, interesting.
Like 10 back-to-back games, not nitpicks games, of them Duoku-ing their comms, and we'll break that down.
Mm.
That might be interesting.
That'd be an interesting case study.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Duoku case study. Mm. Something to think about. You want to move on to mailbag or?
Yep. So we'll skip their clip today in Summoner School. Yep. We'll go straight into Nathan's mailbag. Away we go.
Welcome back for Nathan's mailbag. Jingle, jingle, jingle song.
Alrighty then. Our first question here comes from Alexander. The title of this email is Getting Better at F Keys and Map Awareness. Hi, Nathan and Curtis. I'm a big fan of the podcast. My name's Alex, and I've been a EU Master Tier RE Pantheon mid-main. By reviewing my games, I have noticed that I tend to overlook roam angles, which is especially bad considering the champions that I play. Watching Nemesis, I've noticed that he uses F keys all the time to check on his side lanes, and I was amazed how effortlessly he does it. Since then, I've tried to incorporate F keys to get a better understanding of what's going on outside of mid lane, but no matter what I do, I just can't get the hang of it. In lull states, it's all right, but other than that, it often results in me mispositioning or dropping CS. Would you have any tips on how to improve this? Maybe some special key bindings or something, or do I have to just brute force into my muscle memory? Thanks in advance. So what binds do you use, Curtis, for your FKs?
The mouse button and T.
One mouse button.
Two. I've got two on the side of my mouse, okay. And then T.
Oh, T.
So I don't do all the roles. So I do bot, top, and jungle.
So ADC.
I don't do support.
You don't need to support because they're not the one that's interacting with the wave.
I don't know. I just don't have any more.
Oh, is that right?
If I had three, I actually have a thought
process. I don't have to do support because they're not interacting with the wave.
Yeah, well, I had three buttons, and that's like I realized that's all I'm capable of doing. Yep. Like that's like I was honest with myself. Okay, yep. T I can do,
yep.
And these two mouse buttons. I don't feel like. It's a lot of effort for me to use a fourth. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to pick these roles. So yeah, I use the two mouse buttons for top and bot, and jungle is T. No, sorry, the other way around. So jungle, top is my mouse buttons and T is my AD carry.
I see. So yeah, I'm the similar, but I mean, I'm the jungler, right? So I just use the two mouse buttons though.
Oh, right.
So I do shift one mouse button, the side, because I only have two mouse buttons, top, then just the normal one, mid, and then the bot, the other one, AD carry.
Oh, so you don't do support either?
No.
Oh.
Because it's just, yeah, I don't need to.
Yeah,
because bot will get me to the bot lane. Again, yep. The way I think about it is that support, yeah, I can like, look at the minimap. Exactly. They're roaming and stuff, like I know that.
It's more about the AD carry.
The AD carry is the one actually hitting last hit in.
The FKs themselves are terrible. It's just a terrible location. Unplayable.
You see a lot of people use ZXCV. That's what a lot of pro players, that's very really? Common. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the most common one.
Okay.
Or people will use like A, S, and all that sort of stuff. Because obviously Q, W, E, R. But yeah, play around with it. What don't you feel comfortable. Use F keys. Yeah, but no, F keys are not realistic.
I don't know anyone who uses F keys.
No. But they just call it F keys. That's the default.
That's right. So yeah, you got to find what works for you. But I do think it's useful, especially as a Master Plus player. I think that's the small details that now are very relevant important. To you in your journey, especially when you're an RE Pantheon player. So my advice though for actually learning that skill is go hard on it in the LoL states. Every LoL state, spam them. Like build that muscle memory. If you do that again and again and again and again with reasonable keybinds, it will stick. It will just take time.
Yep. Getting more specific around information collection and F keys. So as you sort of see things happening, you'll start prioritizing. Like when people think about F keys, they think of like Faker like doing all three lanes. It's not actually practical at all, even the top players. So what it would be, it's like a sequence might be, okay, lull state, I check top, check bot. You go for some things, like, you know, push a wave, check top, check bot. Oh, something interesting happening, bot. Next lull state, then it won't be top anymore, it'll be bot again, bot again, bot again. And then it's like, okay, that situation's gone. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way it will work. Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, be sort of, because F keys, I sort of view them as two different ways. It's like you can spam them, you get very little bits of information, not the complete picture. So sometimes I'll sit on my F key a little bit more. It's like, okay, I want to look a bit more about what's going on there. And then they'll start prioritizing based on win conditions, heavy trading, or, you know, alts, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, don't think about it too, like, you know, I just got to spam my F keys. No. It's like, you got to be intentional still with your F key usage. So the spamming's great for just quickly getting like HP, mana, you know, like quick wave state, like really quick. And then if you need to understand a bit more, it's like, oh, I don't know if that's pushing, I don't know if that's slow pushing, like, and then you need to like sit on it a little bit more and then maybe do it multiple times during your lull states or whatever.
Yep, totally, exactly right. And I don't know about you, but I look at the minimap first a lot of the time.
Yeah, minimap is where most of
the information, the beginning, it's like the first step. It's like, oh, okay, my top's in base. I'm not going to pan my camera to my top laner. I look at the minimap, say, okay, my jungle's, I'm not going to look at my jungle doing Krugs. You know, I don't give a shit. It's like, I look at the minimap first. I look at the situation. I'm like, okay, my jungle's on Krugs and my top's in base. All right, I'm going to probably pan my camera bot. I'm not going to look at top or jungle. So it's like, again, common sense, but just look. I usually look at the minimap first.
Yeah, but it's a combination of both, right?
Combination of both.
Like in the early game, I just spam F keys everywhere because I just need to know what's going on with every wave all the time. And then I'll start to prioritize based on what I see with the waves.
I think there's role differences as well. Yeah,
and then in the mid game, which for jungle would be more minimap first, then F key second. Right. So it'll actually evolve throughout the game.
Yep.
But yeah, practice makes perfect, yeah? Focus on it. Look at your reviews.
Takes time.
Look at every single time you have a lull state and you're not getting information. Why, you know? Is it intensity issue? It could be as well, you know? You're just like...
Yeah, and you will probably have to purposely overwhelm your mental stack to get it done.
Yeah, and you will sacrifice CS or, you know, trade.
No, actually, no. Yeah, sorry. I will say one more thing about that, you know, about minimap awareness as well. You'll see me sometimes, even to this day... If I know that it's a very volatile situation, I really, really need to spend mental cycle on the minimap or I need to look somewhere, I'll literally step back in lane. I'll forego a trade. I'll literally...
Because you need to know what's going on.
I need to know what's going on. I can't just stand there and run into the minimap. I literally step back, process information, then come back. Now, obviously, you know, that's maybe not the most optimal, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do. I'm not a robot. I don't have the ability to like go in between. And, you know, you get to a very, very, very high level that way, you know? So there's that as well.
Yeah. Love it. All right, moving on here. Jesse, the title of this email is Level Zero. Hello, Curtis and Nathan. I'm brand new to League of Legends and competitive PC PvP gaming for that matter. After taking in many BBC podcasts and signing the Solid Queue contract, I've gathered enough tools for my toolkit to overcome the anticipatory anxiety I developed around playing with and against other people in normal games. I'm taking your advice of beginning with champ mastery. My question is, after I've picked a champion and role, what is the next step? All of my fundamental CS in trading, basic macro, and many more I'm not even aware of yet are at a very beginner level. Do I need to focus on any one of these in practice tool before jumping into normals, or do I just embrace the suck and play lots of games, worry about these details later?
I wouldn't even think about fundamentals at all.
Yeah, I mean, he says, my question is, after I've picked a champ and role, what's the next step? Champ. You know what I mean? Like, keep going down that champ role.
Play a lot of champs. So just play one champion. Play many, many champions. Yes. Like, play, you might play 20 games of one champ, then move on again and go 30 games of another champ. Just move on. Cycle through. Like, if you do that along, you will play multiple roles as well. But let's say you find a role. Play all different mid champions. So you like play mid for, you like mid, play all different mid champions. Play a bunch of them. 20 games of each. Just go through. And also, don't worry about fundamentals and anything like that. Just literally play, because your goal at the very beginning, right? You might ask why. The goal at the very beginning is actually not to learn fundamentals. The goal at the beginning is to learn what everything does. That's it. You have to learn what every item does and every champion. That's mission number one.
Yep.
And feel it all out.
Because you could be looking at the fundamentals and, like, you know, all this and, like, wave, you know, if you learn all that stuff, but you don't know about a Cho'Gath Q.
Yep.
It's like, well, it's just no point. You know? Like, this is literally step pointless. Number one. So, yeah, learn all the champs in the game. Make sure that he says that, but he says he's picked a champion. So maybe he's done that.
Maybe, maybe not. You see people that take it too literally. Yeah. Gem mastery. No, you got to play a lot of champions.
Yeah.
I get people in my program, in my MLS program, who've skipped that step. They haven't played a bunch of champions. And I say, dude, you just got to play a bunch of champions. You're not ready to main a champ yet. That's a very important step. You need to view the game through differing lenses. Very important.
And that's what you'll be for true beginners, though, more advice, that's right? Correct. Yeah, for true beginners, yep. Like
pre-level 30, yep. Level 30, even low iron.
So let's say again he's done that and he's picked the champion. What's next? Again, my thought process is you got to play ranked with that champion and just get, you know, your first 45 games with that champion and just assess.
Play a lot of normal games first. Once you feel like you're pretty reasonable, you're feeling a bit confident in your normal games, then send it into ranked.
Yes.
And then that's where we got to get into some trading patterns and fundamentals a little bit.
So it goes play a bunch of different champs, normal games. Yep. Pick one in normal games, get comfortable, then ranked.
Yes, that's correct. And then once you're getting into ranked, then we can start to maybe look at fundamentals a little bit. But even then, like at the start, it's more so just champ mastery stuff, like how to use your Q, W, E, R well.
Trading patterns.
Identity, champ identity, champ key identity. Spikes, key, you know, all that stuff. I wouldn't even, remember, champ mastery related stuff always comes before fundamentals. Even though it sounds weird, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, I've really thought about this a lot, Nathan. I don't even know if I like the term fundamentals. I feel like fundamentals, it's weird. I feel like the fundamentals of the game are actually understanding what all the champs are. Because think about it. What the term fundamentals means is that it's literally like, that's like the first thing you learn, you know? But in League, that's not the case.
No.
Right? It's kind of like the fundamentals of the game actually should be underlying game concepts. That's like literally the first thing you need to learn, which is understanding XP and gold, understanding, like, you know, what neutral objectives are and how jungle camps work, and understanding all the champions. You know what I mean?
You don't really call that, you don't think they call that fundamentals. That's just like learning League, then champion, then the actual fundamentals. Where do you want to put the word?
I don't know. I just feel really not unprofessional. Like, okay. When I hear,
it's like learn how to MOBA works.
Yeah, but I don't know, because like I feel like when I hear the term fundamentals, the first thing, like if I would say I'm new to a new sport, for example, I'm playing basketball. You're gonna get into like you're gonna get a coach, and today we're talking about the fundamentals of basketball.
Yeah.
Like you would start with like the fundamentals of basketball, the fundamentals of drill, or something. Like when I think of fundamentals, I think that's the beginning. Maybe I'm overcomplicating it, but like fundamentals, it's weird that we say, oh, fundamentals come later. It just doesn't.
No.
Like, what the fuck is that?
The way that I like the word fundamentals.
Right.
For like.
It's confusing though.
How waves, the fundamentals of wave, the fundamentals of what makes a good and a bad gank. Like, I think that has to be there, but it's like, let's learn how basketball works first.
Right.
It's just not using that word fundamentals.
That's what I'm saying.
And then it's champ mastery and then it's fundamentals.
So like learn so it's a fundamentals than gems and fundamentals.
Yeah, technically.
So it's fundamentals of, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like we're using a term too liberally here. I feel like we need to be more like.
Yeah, maybe the English.
There needs to be another word.
Maybe the English language is too limited, Curtis.
No, or we're just not.
Yeah,
we're just, I feel like we're just going. You know what's, okay, I don't want to harp on this, but one last thing. I feel like when we entered the coaching industry, we've heard the term fundamentals. Yeah,
it actually doesn't really mean much.
You know what I mean? It's just been like, we've just like adopted this bullshit term. Like Joe Blow went out there and knew nothing about teaching League, made up this term, said this term, and said, this is the fundamentals. And now we've just, you know, continued the, you know, this, gone down this line of idiocy. When in reality, we should have actually changed the term, called it something else.
Yeah, fundamentals is a massive buzzword.
It's a buzzword. It's weird. What is fundamental? Like,
I mean, I have a section.
I think it's like, so confusing from someone coming from the outside in and saying we're not starting with fundamentals.
Yeah.
Like, what is? We can't even agree upon what the fundamentals of the game are. Like, what the fuck is that? The fundamentals should be the actual fundamentals. Like, we all agree upon, no bullshit. Like, this is what it is. You start here, but that's not what it is. This is why I think the fundamentals of the game are all those other things, learning what all the champions do, learning the items, learning how minion XP works in gold, and then all that other stuff like trading, weight, they're just concepts.
Concepts.
You know, they're just important concepts.
Yeah.
You know?
So maybe it goes fundamentals, champ mastery, then concepts.
Yeah, yeah. That would make way more sense like in my mind. Like I always feel kind of embarrassed, like if someone comes to me from like another industry, yeah. like This is the fundamentals, but don't start there. Don't start the fundamentals. It's weird.
It doesn't make so much sense, does it? Something to think about. All right, our next question here comes from... And there's no name here. The title of this email is Coherent Question About LOL and Life. Hello, BBC. I was watching the video, one of your podcasts, Why You Feel Hopeless in Your Climb. And the crux of the issue was doing everything but not getting results. I see this then and again on your channel. And so I find myself asking the question, what the fuck am I doing? Been watching BBC and Coach Curtis for 2 years now, but I've never seen anyone talk about how to do the hard work other than to get down to the nitty gritty and do the hard thing. After all these podcasts, I've come to realize that I've been like this all my life. The bare minimum. That's how I live my life, and I have no idea how to change that. In school, all I cared about was an accepted grade. My parents never had any expectations because they sucked at school, so I never cared. The same is true now for gaming as well. I never cared about going pro. Maybe I wanted it, but I just played to be better than other people. I got to Global Elite in CSGO. I got a top 100 placement in a Fortnite tournament among the best players in Europe. I got to Immortal 3 in Valorant. I can't comprehend now the fact that I had the audacity to believe I could be among the great players without doing any of the work in League. I find myself now in terms of gaming in League. Played for 4 to 6 years, something, been Masters since Season 12, peaked 300 LP in Season 13. Feel like a sham watching Curtis's videos. Much like my real life, I just do the bare minimum. I just play the game. I want to reach Challenger, but I can't VOD review. I try to VOD review and I get bored out of my mind. I try to do 3 blocks, but end up playing more or less depending on my mood. I have periods where I think about the comps and skirmishing, but most of the time I end up just egoing, thinking I'll win because I'm better. I end up just watching your podcast to make myself feel better and motivated, like I'm some sort of saint for thinking about my 2v2 before the game starts. I understand it's a very broad question and difficult to answer, but how do I actually get off my ass and do the work? Am I hopeless in the opposite sense of doing everything but not getting results? Sure, for me, it might work better in gaming than that guy, but only because I've been a gamer since birth. But that stops now at this Masters roadblock. Will I be useless my entire life? Will I end up a lazy deadbeat? How do I stop taking the easy way? These questions plague my mind and I'm at a loss.
Wow, what a great question.
It's so funny. When he's like beginning this, it sounds like he's like, it sounded like he was like a gold player or like a silver player. I mean, he's like, oh, like I'm master. I've been top ranks in all these games, which again.
Gaming history,
right?
He's played games since a kid.
But he's at a level, it seems, where he's not satisfied with where he's at and he's not pushing himself whatsoever. And that can happen in anyone, in any level of their... We talked about that before, about what makes an expert last episode, deliberate practice. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse.
To me, what it sounds like from the outside is that he's been so comfortable in his life because he felt like, well, in especially, you know, gaming, he's been so good at every game relative to probably everyone else he knows and his friends and stuff.
No need to push.
There's no need to push. He's if I've got, you know, global in that and top rank in this and top rank in that, then, you know, I've never had to actually push. And so he's relied on me just, you know, his gaming experience, gaming pedigree, if you will, to get results. And now he's at a point where, okay, well, his talent or his gaming experience or gaming background has got him to a point where he's plateaued. Now what? Now it's now the defense mechanism kicks in. You know, oh, that's good enough. You can relax. You don't need to push. It's okay. Just cap out at Master 300. You know, he's kind of got to that point. I feel like one of the reasons he doesn't want to push is that it's like a habit. I think there's literally a habit of just doing the minimum and relying on
talent,
yep, right, if you will. But I think there's that. I also think there's probably a fear of potentially failure because he's never done that. He's never actually pushed himself. I resonate so deeply with this email because that was exactly me. I was played games from a young age. I was good at every game I'd played. And then, you know, you get to a point where you're like, fuck me, there are people that are better than me. Okay, wow, I actually need to learn how to learn. Okay, I don't know how to learn. If I'm not good at something, I just thought it's talent, right? That's just it. Like, that guy's just a better gamer. Yeah. The better game sends you to better. Yeah. What do I do? I just got to play more? Hopefully that I'm... And then you don't. That guy's just still better than you. Like, well, what the fuck? Then you're questioning your reality. You lose your confidence. You start to, like, become depressed or anxious or whatever. Like, it starts to chain series of events. So... You know, the reality is that you got to learn how to learn. And in order to do that, you have to get incredibly uncomfortable and set a goal. You have to set a goal, an ambitious goal. That's where it starts. You have to set an ambitious goal that excites you, something that genuinely motivates you, something that you can like, you can actually like look forward to. It's like, I want to achieve that. It doesn't have to be getting Challenger League. It could be something else in your life, but it has to be one thing. I want to be able to bench press 100 kilos. I want to be able to, I want to get to Challenger League. I want to be able to run this far in this amount of time, whatever the hell it is. You need to set an ambitious goal. That's number one.
It seems like reading that email, it's very much about results focused or end game. Like it's,
I think you need that though.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good.
It's good. You need that. But like that's
then what?
But he's not, he doesn't love the, he doesn't learn to learn how to learn. The destination is the journey. You really got to really love the journey aspect of things. Otherwise, you are going to beat yourself up.
Yeah, but this is where I'm going to get more practical though. I agree. I think you learn to love the journey. You don't love the journey at the start.
Yeah, you have to learn. But how you to can't. Do. That's like Novak Djokovic. You're talking about that example of again. That's I think it's a bit tricky when you're only going for end result or setting ambitious goals. It's like, why do I love the game?
But you can't learn to love the process without having a goal. I don't think. In a way, I think it's too theoretical for individual to be like, just play and learn the process.
Yeah, I just go around. I just love learning everything.
It's not going to work. Well,
yeah, you got to have some
like Novak Djokovic wanted to be a great, amazing, win multiple Grand Slams.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the means, you know, that wasn't the it. It was like, okay, I want to win Grand Slams. How do I do that? Okay, I've got to be a better tennis player. Okay, how do I be a better tennis player? Let's get specific. Diet, exercise regime, how am I practicing, mindset. Like, you actually get into that. It's
and
like,
then
okay.
learn to love that.
Part. And then you learn to love that. So it's like for him, I want to be a challenger. Let's say, hypothetically, he wants to be a challenger league player. Okay, that's my goal. Okay, well, what do I need to do? What process do I need to follow to be a challenger level league player? Like what skills do I need to develop? Okay, well, I got to know my match loss better. Okay, I got to have better camera panning. Okay, I got to process more information. I got to be better at my lull sets. I got to do all these things, right? It's like, okay, well then how do I do that? Why? Even one of them, I got to learn how to review. Boom. And you start to actually work on these underlying things with the intention to be a challenger player. Now, for him, his challenge, I guarantee you, is going to be, he's going to get into it. And then you know what his defense mechanism is going to be? I'm bored. This sucks. Why am I doing this? It's going to be that whole, you know, when David Goggins talks about this, all the reasons why you shouldn't be doing what you're doing right now are going to come to your mind, all the demons. So it's like you go out there, it's like the alarm goes off when David Goggins, like 4:30 in the morning. It's like you said to yourself you're going to go for a run. Every single bit of voice is going to say, every reason why you shouldn't go. Oh, it's too cold. Oh, you don't need to. You ran yesterday. You're sore. Fuck it. You're already fit. You look good. Every reason is going to come there. Your job and what you need to do is get over that hurdle and literally just do it anyway. The do it anyway. And then by doing it anyway, you'd learn to love the process. And that's how it works. But that's so fucking hard.
It's really difficult.
Especially for him. He has never done that. And that was so hard for me. It took me so long to shift my mindset to have a growth mindset because I didn't even know what it was to learn. I didn't know. I was scared to review. I was scared to like actually own my weaknesses, but you have to brute force it. And then once you see the beauty of learning and you feel the learning and you feel the power of process, that then it becomes addictive. But you won't get addicted to the process or learn to love the process until you feel some semblance of positivity from it or get something from it. That's at least what I think. That's the no bullshit practical thing.
Yeah.
In my experience.
I'm going to talk about a gym analogy, Curtis, because the gym's sort of like a new thing that I learned after league, right? Learning to love the process of going to the gym. Because that idea of like loving the gym, like pushing yourself to pay, it just doesn't make sense. Or wouldn't make sense to me as a kid, right? Like, you know,
even 5 years ago, if someone told you, would just, no.
And now it's like, I go there, it's painful, it's actually very difficult, but you get addicted to that feeling. It's hard to describe.
You just feel like a better person. You just feel better.
Is it just like, you know that the long term,
it's investing in yourself.
It's investing in yourself in the long term.
It's addictive to invest in yourself. You know you're doing something that's better for you in the long run.
Yeah.
And you feel better doing it. Like just physically, mentally. I think you can't even, it's hard to articulate why gym's addictive because it's...
Maybe the physical aspects of gym isn't the same as like other things. Yeah. I don't know.
I think the biological stuff, yeah, hormones and stuff.
I guess maybe it's just, it's actually easier to get addicted to that sort of stuff.
For sure.
Rather than like, because that's like a, you know, getting stronger and stuff, that feels great, but like, we're not designed to be professional video game players from all the evolution. You know what I mean? So that's like, you got to push yourself really much harder in that. So maybe it's a bad analogy.
It's like I think pushing yourself mentally is harder than pushing yourself physically.
Yeah.
In my experience, I mean, I think this maybe differs for different personality types. I know people that can easily push themselves physically and also the other way around. You know, like it just depends on personality type. But I would say for us, I think we can safely agree that pushing yourself physically is easier for us, I would say, than mentally. Would you agree?
But I guess they're both combined though, aren't
both
they?
Combined.
Like physical is a mental
You can't
thing
do
well.
One without the other. I agree. It's hard to push yourself mentally without any physical component.
Yes, that's the thing.
You need to
that's
be able to work out. Like if you don't sleep and eat and don't work out, it's very hard to focus mentally.
Yes.
And have the discipline mentally, for sure.
That's why I think they're connected.
They're 100% connected. But I really think that there is an element of discipline and there is an element of learning to love the process, like Nathan said. And I think there's an element of like, you're going to have to overcome a lot of demons and a lot of bullshit to like actually like stick with it. And you really got to set a goal and ambition. You got to set a goal that's exciting, but you know, it's ambitious. It's kind of scary. And you got to know that you're not going to achieve it in a long, it's going to take time. It's got a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of effort and you're going to face so much adversity. You're going to want to give up. You're going to want to like make an excuse as to why you shouldn't do it. You're going to think that you should quit. You're wasting time. Every reason why you shouldn't do it is going to come up. That's like the solo queue contract, if you will, but you got to prepare yourself for it. But if you can stick through that and actually achieve that goal, knowing that you followed a process and you've actually learned shit and you've put your all into it, you come out.
It just
out,
takes that one time.
That one time. You're going to come out that other side of that, such a better version of yourself.
Yeah.
Period. Fact. No bullshit. That's the way it will work. And you will apply that to everything for the rest of your life in any endeavor, whether it's your professional life or your relationships or anything. I truly believe that. That's the fundamental message of the BBC.
Yeah.
Basic, one of the fundamental messages.
Fundamentals.
The fundamentals are my favorite word.
All right. That's it for today's episode then, everyone.
Beautiful.
Good work. Let's keep on.
Let us know in the comments about JoyQ.
Yep. Let us know. We'll see you guys next week.